Shouldn't Nevada have a lieutenant governor who is both trustworthy and competent and at least knows what that job is about? Number one, refereeing the conflicts between the Democrats and Republicans. Number two, bringing more tourists to Nevada. Just as no one picks the referee from one of the teams, I, as a nonpartisan, will be fair and objective in breaking tie votes in the Senate. As the only lieutenant governor candidate with international experience, I know how we can double the number of tourists to Nevada. My name is Ed Uhling, paid for by the friends of Ed Uhling.
Adam Laxalt promised he would defend our gun rights, but he lied. Adam Laxalt just came in support of red flag gun laws like they have in California that allow a social worker or an ex-wife to take away your guns without being convicted of a crime. Good luck getting your guns back from a liberal judge. Call Adam Laxalt and tell him to keep his hands off our guns. Adam Laxalt, just another rhino. Paid for by Ryan Bundy for Governor Campaign.
Washington, D.C. I got a lot of evil there, but we're getting it out step by step. A lot of evil. A lot of bad people. A lot of bad people. A lot of fake media. Look at them. A lot of fake media. Listen up. NBC is perhaps worse than CNN, I have to tell you. And MSNBC is horrible.
Check it out.
It's 1999. I'm on Meet the Press. A show now headed by Sleepy Eyes Chuck Todd. He's a sleeping son of a bitch, I'll tell you.
That sounds awfully harsh. Why can't you be a little more supportive?
Number one, time is running out. Number two, time is running out. Number three, time is running out. Number four,
time is running out. Ladies and gentlemen, Kevin Wall.
Fun lovers and truth seekers, you have come to the right place. It's Live and Local Now for a Friday. As you know, if you've been with us over the last three plus years on this radio station, you know that we don't take Fridays lightly. And in fact, we celebrate what we believe to be the best day of the week.
It's Friday.
Friday.
Oh yeah, here we go.
Wall to wall, it's Friday.
Friday.
Yeah, Friday's the day that we let our hair down, we don't take ourselves too seriously, and we have fun.
Hey.
It's Friday.
Friday.
Wall to wall, it's Friday.
Come on, you know better than that. It's Friday. We have so much fun on Fridays. Last night in Columbia, Missouri, the president talked about birthright citizenship and why he wants to eliminate it. What is birthright citizenship? Where did it come from? Why is it still with us? Is it an antiquated notion? You know, we don't have slaves anymore. Is this something whose time has come and gone? Let's check in with Mark Smith. He's a constitutional attorney and a New York Times bestseller. He has written extensively about birthright citizenship in his book, Disrobed. And he joins us on our City National Bank guest hotline. Mark, where are you calling us from today?
Hi, Kevin. Thanks for having me on. Today I'm calling from, believe it or not, the socialist state of Vermont. I happen to be up here for a couple of days on some family business. So although I'm usually in New York City, also not part of America, today I'm actually in Vermont. So I continue my tour of the socialist Northeast.
Wow. The People's Republic of Vermont, really nice place. Say hello to Bernie Sanders if you see him up in that part of the country. Give us a little bit of history, because we don't teach civics in our high schools anymore. Explain what birthright citizenship is and where it came from.
Yeah. So birthright citizenship is really about who becomes an American citizen when they're born here in the country. It stems from the post-Civil War era, where after the Civil War, the federal government wanted to make sure that the African-American slaves who were now freed were full-blown American citizens. So the government you know, basically created and ratified three constitutional amendments, the 13th, the 14th, and the 15th. The 13th said slaves were free, the 14th said former slaves or citizens, and the 15th said that former slaves could now vote in elections. And the whole focus was on making sure that African-American slaves born in the United States were Americans. Now, what's happened, though, is that over the 100-plus years, the immigration lobby has taken advantage of some of the language in the 14th Amendment that talks about being born in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof to make the argument that anyone born in the United States is automatically an American citizen regardless of who their parents are. Now, that means, under the law today, that if Osama bin Laden, right, if he were alive and had a wife and they had a kid and the kid was born in the United States, that kid, believe it or not, would be an American citizen under the interpretation of the 14th Amendment as it interpreted today. But the reality is the U.S. Supreme Court has not squarely addressed this question. So what's been going on is the immigration lobby or the open border lobby has been taking advantage of this ambiguity for decades to create American citizens that arguably should not be American citizens under the law. But the dilemma is, Kevin, and I'll tell you the problem. To sue in court, you have to have what's known as standing. And standing means that you've been directly impacted by something. You can't just, if you don't like Donald Trump, you can't just sue in court about it. You know, you have to be directly hurt to sue. So what happened is, the only people that benefit from the birthright citizenship argument, which again is, you're born in America, you're automatically American, period, full stop, are the people that benefit from it. So no one has been hurt by birthright citizenship directly, so no one could sue over this. But now, if the president issues an executive order that says birthright citizenship for the children of illegal immigrants is now outlawed, they're not American citizens anymore, that's going to trigger a whole series of lawsuits that will eventually wind their way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. And once there, the U.S. Supreme Court will finally be able to squarely address whether or not children of illegal immigrants are automatically American citizens just by virtue of the fact that they're born on our soil.
The President of the United States, this is cut four, talked about birthright citizenship last night, Columbia, Missouri.
Democrats are the party of open borders, socialism, and crime, whether you like it or not. As we speak, the Democrat Party is openly encouraging millions of illegal aliens to break our laws, violate our borders, and bankrupt our country, and they want to sign them up for free health care, free welfare, free education, and, of course, the right to vote. Great. And the Democrats want to continue giving automatic birthright citizenship to every child born to an illegal alien, even if they've been on our soil for a mere matter of seconds. Hundreds of thousands of children born to illegal immigrants are made automatic citizens of the United States every year because of this crazy, lunatic policy that we can end, that we can end. We need support, but we can end. And they're all made instantly eligible for every privilege and benefit of American citizenship. All of you, you get nothing more than they do. They're full citizens. And it's costing us many, many billions of dollars a year.
Let me ask you, the fact that it costs us money, does that give us standing? Whoops.
Come out with a... No, Kevin, it doesn't. The Supreme Court has a doctrine called taxpayer standing cases. And just because you pay taxes and the government spends your money on a policy you disagree with, that does not give you the right to sue in court, unfortunately. So again, in the birthright citizenship context, the only people directly impacted by the birthright citizen, meaning you're automatically a U.S. citizen upon your birth, regardless of whether your parents are here legally or not, are the people that benefit from it. And they're never going to sue to challenge it because they get goodies out of it. And there is no other side. But the Donald Donald Trump is going to change that with the executive order, and thank God for that.
Again, Mark Smith joining us, constitutional attorney, New York Times bestselling author. He has written extensively about birthright citizenship in his book, Disrobed. Can you talk a little bit about this notion of being able to do this by executive order? Jonathan Turley says, well, maybe you can. You talk with other people. Judge Napolitano on Fox News says absolutely no. Give us the pros and cons of executive order change birthright citizenship.
I think that the president can arguably do it with an executive order because it touches on immigration. And as we know, especially from the recent Supreme Court case in the spring involving the travel ban, when it comes to immigration policy and who is a citizen under the immigration policy, there's a lot of deference given to decisions made by the president of the United States. So if this was an executive order on other things like gun rights, let's say, probably not so much. But what the president is talking about, a legal interpretation of the 14th Amendment as applied to immigrants and illegal immigrants and their children, I think there's a good chance the executive order could be upheld. But it really doesn't matter if he can do it by executive order. The executive order is going to be beneficial because it's going to start the legal process and the march to the U.S. Supreme Court, and then the U.S. Supreme Court will decide it, and what they decide I think will be pretty favorable here, because the case law, the history here is that if you break into a country illegally, you're essentially a foreign invader under the law, you're a trespasser under the law, and your children are not entitled to the benefits of that country. You are not, your child is not a citizen if you break into a country illegally, because you're deemed an invader or a trespasser, and that goes back to the English common law, where we got much of our American law from.
Now, does that mean when the president says that we've got an invasion, or members of Congress are calling this an invasion, the caravans that right now, there are multiple caravans down in Mexico headed towards the U.S. border, does that mean they're right? I mean, a lot of Democrats have pushed back saying, this is not an invasion, this is people with no shoes and with kids and young infants. This isn't a foreign invasion. We don't need the federal troops at the border. Does that mean that maybe the president's right?
Well, first of all, it is these caravans are an invasion. And the definition of invasion just means that someone's come into your house or to your country without your permission, right? They've broken in. It is an invasion because they're trespassing or sneaking into your country or your home, right? And so there's no debate this is actually an invasion. Whether or not it's an armed invasion with bombs and guns and weapons and all that sort of thing that we, you know, see in the movies and saw in World War II with Pearl Harbor, yeah, I guess it's not an invasion in that sense. But legally, it's clearly an invasion and an attack on the country as a matter of law.
Mark, let me ask you, a little bit of controversy has come up in just the last couple of days, really since yesterday, when the president said that if these foreign invaders, if they throw rocks at our federal troops, that the federal troops have a right to respond as if they had rifles, as if the invaders had rifles. Does he have a legal leg to stand on to be able to do that? I mean, that seems a little bit extreme.
Well, David killed Goliath with a rock. So we know that rocks can kill, right? So as to whether or not you should shoot someone who throws a rock at you, I guess it depends a lot about the context. But if I drop a big rock on your head, there's plenty of people that get killed every year by getting hit over the head with a rock or a baseball bat or a hammer. So, yeah, I mean, you can die getting hit over the head with, you know, hard objects such as rocks. And if someone has threatened your life, I think you are morally and legally entitled to fight back and defend yourself and your body and your family and your friends and your country. So, yeah, I think if these people are literally trying to engage in lethal violence, whether it be with a rock, a gun, a bomb, a knife, a car, it doesn't matter what they're using to endanger the lives of our soldiers, then I think our soldiers are well within their rights to take the steps they need to defend themselves and their lives.
I want to ask you about the invading force that is headed towards our southern border and how we should engage. We're deploying, the president says he's going to deploy upwards of 15,000 troops to our southern border. And I guess my question is, Do we head them off at the pass? Do we actually go into a sovereign nation, Mexico, and go and stop these people, or do we wait? Do we have to wait till they get to our border?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Legally, I think we probably could cross onto Mexican territory to stop the threat under the law. There's a classic legal doctrine called necessity. And what that means is, let's say you have a home and there's another home next to yours. You are allowed to, it depends on the context, but you are often allowed to sort of destroy your neighbor's property to protect your home out of necessity. Now, you might ultimately have to pay your neighbor to reimburse him or her for the damage to the house, but you are often allowed to destroy property or to otherwise break the law to protect your property and or your lives. Here, I would say by analogy, Kevin, that the U.S. could step into Mexican territory by virtue of necessity to stop the invading army. And the truth is, as a practical matter, I'd be on the phone with the Mexican president and say, here's the story. We're going to either you do this or we're going to do this. We're giving you the choice. And it's going to look a whole lot better if you with the Mexican army stop these people than if we have to do your job for you or we do our job for you. But we're doing this with or without you. You tell us how you want to handle it. But again, I think the president does a great job with international diplomacy, contrary to what the mainstream media says. So as far as I'm concerned, I have a feeling that the president has some good ideas about how he's going to deal with us at the border.
I think he knows something maybe some of the leftists in this country have not figured out. Mark Smith joining us, constitutional attorney, New York Times best-selling author. He has written extensively about birthright citizenship in his book. It's called Disrobed. Tell us what Disrobed's all about.
Well, Disrobed is a book that I wrote that talked about how the best way to stop liberal judicial activism and liberal abuse of the court system is by essentially fighting fire with fire. That rather than simply going in as a conservative and talking about the rule of law, judicial restraint, that judicial activism is bad, I said we should consider embracing some of these strategies and tactics and using it against the left, because the only way to teach the left that judicial activism is bad is by using it against them. And I discuss that in the book Disrobed. And in that book, I talk a lot about the birthright citizenship context and the controversy there. And, of course, now the president's discussing it as well.
Is it available Amazon, better bookstores everywhere?
That's right. It's in Amazon and bookstores everywhere. Mark W. Smith, and the book is Disrobed.
Mark, thanks so much. I appreciate it. You have a great weekend. I know we'll talk
again.
You too. Thanks so much.
Sounds good, Kevin.
There you go. Mark Smith, the constitutional attorney, doing some pro bono work for us. We always like that, where the meter's not running. Stick around. More to do. Oh, what did the president say last night in Columbia, Missouri? You're not going to believe this. Some amazing stuff coming out of that rally last night. We'll have it for you coming up next. Live and local now. Nancy Pelosi is trying to take over Nevada. Do I have your attention? Hey, Kevin Wall here with a very important message for all Nevadans. If you want to stop Nancy Pelosi and elitist out-of-state liberals from invading our state, you've got to get out and vote for Danny Tarkanian. Danny is the Trump-endorsed conservative candidate for Congress. He's a fighter, offering real solutions for Nevada families, solutions like school choice. Danny believes that you as parents deserve a say in how your tax dollars are spent and which education system is best for your children. And Danny will work hard with President Trump to finally secure our borders. For our safety and security, it's an absolute must. In Congress, Danny will strengthen our country and our state by supporting the America First agenda that's already making America great again. Congress has been broken for a long time, folks, and that's why we need Danny Tarkanian's common sense approach. He'll get things done in Washington. I urge you to do the right thing for Nevada and for America and support our friend Danny Tarkanian for Congress.
I'm Danny Tarkanian, and I approve this message paid for by Tarkanian for Congress.
Two men, two different paths. Las Vegas politician Steve Sisolak started as a telemarketer, hounding Nevadans with calls during dinner. Then he became a politician. First a university regent, doubling tuition prices on Nevada students. And later as a Clark County commissioner, where Sisolak was called corrupt by a judge, investigated by the FBI. Sisolak has reportedly handed out government contracts to his Las Vegas contributors. Then there's Adam Laxalt. Laxalt served our nation in uniform, volunteered for Iraq, taught at the Naval Academy, became America's youngest attorney general. Laxalt tackled opioid abuse, prosecuted elder fraud, fought for our local land and water rights, and has successfully led the way in protecting our constitutional rights as Nevadans. Sisolak and Laxalt, which one for governor? Sisolak, who has always looked out for himself, or Adam Laxalt, who has always looked out for you? Paid for by Laxalt for Nevada.
Hey, Kevin Wall here. This election will impact the direction of Nevada politics for many years to come. During last year's state legislative session, the Democrats nearly passed bills that would have made Nevada a sanctuary state, raised our taxes, increased regulations on our businesses, limited parent school choice, and violated our Second Amendment rights. If we don't elect Republicans throughout the state of Nevada on November 6th, these bills will pass during next year's legislative session. I urge you to vote and vote for Republicans up and down the ballot. And I urge you to vote no on ballot issue question 5. A no vote on question 5 is essential to maintain fair elections. A yes vote opens the door for voter fraud. California has acknowledged that 25,000 people were illegally registered to vote after they passed a similar law. This message has been paid for by the Nevada Federation of Republican Women. To find their club in your area, visit nvfrw.org. That's nvfrw.org.
I am Jim Marchant, and I'm running for re-election for Assembly District 37. I will vote against any effort to raise your property taxes, against allowing Nevada to become a sanctuary state, against continued efforts to violate your Second Amendment rights, and against school districts being able to levy taxes on you. This is the most critical election in our history, and it is very important that you get out and vote for candidates like me that believe as you do. I am Jim Marchant, and I humbly ask for your support and vote. Paid for by the committee to elect Jim Marchant.
Nevada conservatives lost a good friend when Republican Assembly District 36 candidate Dennis Hoff shockingly passed away just 3 weeks before the election. But Dennis's name will still be on the ballot, and it's important for you to vote for him so a Republican can be appointed to fill his term. Also, please join us for a Celebration of Life memorial service in Dennis's honor on Friday, November 16th at 6 p.m. at the Pahrump Nugget. For more information, go to keep36red.com. That's keep36red.com. Paid for by Friends of Hoff.
790 Las Vegas and 98.1 Palm Springs. Talk now. Talk that rocks.
All across the state of Nevada and in SoCal, too. It's live and local now. A lot of people asking the question, what about the Hispanic vote? And could the Hispanic vote be the balance of power in the upcoming election? By the way, today is the last day of early voting. If you don't vote today, you are committed to Tuesday. Okay? That's how important what we're talking about is. It's either today or it's next Tuesday. You be the judge. Get out and vote today. Just get out and vote today. Do it the simple way. Stick around. Joining us next, Kevin Hernandez, Policy Director for the Libre Initiative. What is the national perspective? And could Hispanics be the balance of power in this election? We'll talk about that and more coming up. Live and local, now. It ain't me.
I ain't no 790 Las Vegas and 98.1 Palm Springs. Talk now. Talk that rocks.
All across the state of Nevada and in SoCal, too, it's live and local now. We've got a midterm election coming up next Tuesday. This is the last day of early voting across the state of Nevada. Some communities voted one day. In Searchlight, they voted on the 24th. But joining us is Kevin Hernandez, Policy Director for the Libre Initiative, joining us in studio. And first of all, thanks for coming up from D.C. all the way down here. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, I'm happy to get out of there every once in a while, too. So I appreciate you having me, and good morning.
Well, welcome back to civilization. Let me just ask you, there have been a lot of people looking at this election and saying that they're wondering whether millennials are going to be the linchpin, if they're going to be the difference maker in the election. There are a lot of people talking about Hispanics and whether the Hispanic vote will once and for all become the difference maker. What is your assessment? You travel the country, you talk with Hispanics and Hispanic groups all across the country. What do you make of this, and is it possible that the Hispanic vote might be the difference maker?
Absolutely, I do think so. I think oftentimes the problem, with our community, to your point, is that we underperform in terms of voter turnout. A lot of folks are either disillusioned by the thought of voting and essentially thinking that their votes aren't being heard or their voices aren't being heard, which is, certainly the wrong approach to take to this, because it's one of the civic liberties that we have here in this country that, a lot of folks, especially in the Hispanic community, be it their parents, themselves, or grandparents, come from countries that don't afford that. And so that's something that us as an organization, we try to make sure we drive that point home, that this is your civic duty to make sure that your voice is heard. And, when talking about power in numbers, the Hispanic community is growing at such a rapid rate all over the country. I mean, first, second, third generation Hispanic Americans. I myself, the child of Colombian immigrants to this country, born in New Jersey, raised in Tampa, Florida, I make sure to vote because, while my parents come from a country that you are allowed to exercise your vote, it's oftentimes that in countries, specifically in Latin America, a lot of the power of government is centralized at the top, right? And there's not as many elections as there are here. So here, you have the opportunity to vote for governor, for senators, your local member of Congress, your local dog catcher in some places. Yeah, I mean, to that extent that we have such a great democracy and we need that sort of civic participation is important. So that's exactly why, we're driving that message home to folks all across the country, here in Vegas in particular. We're knocking on doors. We're not saying, hey, vote for X, Y, and Z right now. We're focused on, hey, are you sure that you have mailed in your ballot if you have, sent it in early on? Are you aware that early voting ends today? Did you know that the polls open from 7 to 7? On election day? So these are the things that we want to make sure that folks are aware of and making sure that we can drive them to the polls because, at the end of the day, regardless of political stripes or, which way one person can vote, it's important that as a community and as a voting bloc, if you will, that we are actually exercising our right to vote and making sure that we're making that difference.
Again, Kevin Hernandez joining us, National Policy Director for the Libre Initiative. And I want to go back kind of to the beginning. I probably should have asked this. First, the Libre Initiative, we have Daniel Garza, your president, and others from the Libre Initiative on a fairly regular basis. But a lot of people may not know what the Libre Initiative is. Is it like the National Council of La Raza, Mi Familia? Explain what it is and how it's different than some of these other Hispanic organizations.
Sure. I'll start by saying that we certainly are different. Oftentimes you have a lot of Hispanic organizations that think one way and think that the community thinks one way, right? And that's completely wrong because as a whole community, all across the country, I mean, Hispanics in Nevada, Hispanics in Florida and Texas, I mean, we're not a monolithic group by any means, and I make that argument when folks always say, well, the Hispanic community tends to vote one way or tends to vote the other way. Well, no, there are plenty of examples across the country where that's exactly not the case. And that's why it's important for candidates to talk to the Hispanic community and actively engage them. But Libre Initiative as an organization, we work all across the country in over 10 states to empower the Hispanic community. We're an organization that believes in free market principles. We believe that by lowering barriers to opportunity and helping others succeed in society and in the economy, we all prosper. And we believe that the approach to that is one of limited government and by removing barriers and making sure that free people can make decisions on their own, because we know that free people are able to make better decisions for themselves.
I want to ask you, in the last week, we've seen a lot of news about caravans, about birthright citizenship. Does all that talk make your job more difficult? Does it resonate with Hispanics? Does it turn Hispanics off when they see stuff like this?
Well, I think it certainly adds a lot more noise to what we're currently you know, I think focused on as an organization right now is making sure that the Hispanic community is coming out to vote, right? And when you have a lot of distractions of potentially just rhetoric around the election cycle by elected officials or by the president in this case, you know, I don't think it makes it any easier. But the important thing that we try to, I think, stay focused on is when we talk to people, when we talk to individuals across the country, we want to make sure that they're aware of who they're voting for, right? And it's not just, you know, vote for this party or this party because, you know, my aunt or my mom is voting this way. It's making sure that they understand the platforms and the ideals of these candidates, because at the end of the day, that's what's going to affect them the most. That's what's going to have the direct impact all across the country, both federal candidates, but even, you know, very much so at the local level as well.
I want to ask you about voting. Time was when it was there was a perception out there that Hispanics voted on one issue, and that's immigration reform. And that was the only issue. Taxation, nah, doesn't matter. Wage growth, doesn't matter. Any of that stuff, doesn't matter. Has it changed in the Hispanic community? And by the way, was that ever accurate? Was that ever an accurate depiction of the Hispanic vote, that they are essentially a one-issue constituency?
Yeah, certainly not. And I think that's part of the wedge that's possibly driven by certain groups that have, you know, an agenda, right, or a wedge to drive, that immigration for some reason is the only important issue to Hispanics. But that couldn't be further from the truth. While it is an important issue, certainly, it's definitely not the only issue, nor is it, it is an important issue for a lot of Hispanics, but I wouldn't say it's any more important than, you know, economic growth, making sure that there are jobs available, making sure that education is available as well, educational opportunities for their children. I think one thing very, very particular, you know, with the Hispanic community are the values of faith, family, and hard work, right? And, you know, a part of that also is making sure that, you know, you're getting your education. Myself growing up, that's the one thing that my parents always drove home is make sure you get your education, make sure you get your education, you know, they didn't necessarily go to college, but they knew that that was the key to success, right? To make sure, not necessarily college, but just making sure that you're always educating yourself and trying to live a fulfilling life by bettering yourself. And so I think education, especially in the state of Nevada, is so important here because there's so much room for growth, for opportunities, for education, educational opportunities, charter schools, education savings accounts. There are so many different opportunities that are still available to implement here in the state to bring about more educational freedom to families here in the great state.
I know that Libre Initiative has been very busy, very active here in the state of Nevada. I'm curious nationally, and you're the National Policy Director, Kevin Hernandez is his name, with the Libre Initiative. Have you been active at all in Texas and in that Senate race, Beto O'Rourke, whose given name is Robert Francis, by the way, but who's gonna let that stand in the way of a good story? And of course, Ted Cruz. Have you spent much time in Texas, and is the Libre Initiative active down there?
So we're very active in Texas, but the main race that we're focusing on is Texas 23, which is Congressman Will Hurd. So his district is really interesting. It spans for a couple hours, actually, to drive from one side to the other. So he's all the way from El Paso, Texas, on the west corner, all the way out to San Antonio. So his district covers a lot of ground. But to his credit, he has visited every single county, and he makes it a point to make sure that all of his constituents are being heard, whether they agree with him or not. Because right now, he's the person that represents them. And he's been doing a great job since he's been elected, actually, of representing them. And also with engaging folks that don't necessarily agree with him that are his constituents. Because he understands that he is a representative, not just for those that voted for him, but for all of them. And he's a great champion on trade, on expanding markets for Texas entrepreneurs, businesses, and consumers to expand. And he's also a very pragmatic leader, I think, on the issue of immigration as well. So we've been out there, you know, fully door knocking, getting out the vote.
How's he doing?
Well, I think he's looking pretty good. It's his district is not only is it interesting because of how many square miles it covers, but it's also a Hispanic majority district, and Will Hurd is not Hispanic. He's an African American man who, when he first got elected into office in 2014, he beat out an incumbent who was a Hispanic Democrat out there. So that was the first part where I think he started turning people's heads, because it was a Hispanic majority community didn't mean that they necessarily all voted one way. And if anything, this showed also that you didn't have to be a Hispanic candidate per se either. You had to understand the values of the Hispanic community. You had to actively engage them, and you had to, you know, work to make sure that your district was going to prosper. And I think he did that by voting for tax reform as well, which brought about a lot of economic growth to the state of Texas and all over the country.
I know the Republican Party has been late to the party, so to speak, when it comes to outreach to Hispanics, recruiting Hispanic candidates. Are they doing a better job today than they were, say, 5 years ago?
Well, you know, I do think that they were late to the party. To take a bit more of a positive approach, I guess, better late than never, right? I think we saw tremendous positive takeaways from President Bush's election, where he got a substantial amount of the Hispanic vote. He was actively engaging them. You know, he wasn't necessarily just talking to them as a voting bloc right before elections. He made it a point to work with them, to work with leaders, and make sure also that his overall message resonated, and he connected those dots of how what he was doing would benefit the Hispanic community. And I think that's what's of importance, is how do your policies tie back toward a better life for all Americans, but in this case also Hispanic Americans in particular.
We've been seeing improved numbers by President Trump in the Hispanic community, in the African-American community, 30% approval rating and more. Can you talk a little bit, when you strip away all the noise of the Trump presidency, is he doing a better job for Hispanics? I mean, we know the unemployment rate and the jobs info for Hispanics is like off the charts, best in the history, the best in recorded history.
Yeah. Now, I will say with a caveat that I do think that rhetoric is important, right? I do think that, you know, oftentimes some of the tone and word choices that are taken by the president, you know, certainly do not help with bringing about consensus in that sense. But I think there is importance with highlighting, you know, to your point, that the overall approval rating amongst Hispanic Americans and African Americans has gone up. And that shouldn't be any surprise, because with the strong economic growth that we have been seeing, it's raising standards of living, right? You know, if there are 7 million unfilled jobs, it affords a worker more opportunity or more flexibility to potentially leave the job that they're in if they're unhappy. And that's the beauty of the market, is that they have the opportunity with so many unfilled jobs to say, you know what, well, I'll go over there and I'll go take that job, which is offering me either A, more money, or more flexibility, or more peace of mind. And that's where you know, you start seeing some of the competition in wages, where then, you know, employers are having to compete for folks because there are so many unfilled jobs. I think the Hispanic community has seen the fruits of that labor.
Again, Kevin Hernandez joining us, policy director for the Libre Initiative. And he hails from Florida, lives in the District of Columbia. What is your sense nationwide about potential voter turnout? I know a lot of politicians like to read the tea leaves by looking at the early voting numbers. Is there anything you can extrapolate from early voting numbers around the country about turnout, especially in the Hispanic community?
You know, I wish I had that crystal ball, but I do think that voter turnout will not be as low as folks often think it will be during midterms, I guess, to somewhat answer that question, right? Because I'm not sure exactly how high that will be, if it'll only be for one party versus another. But what I have heard from folks as I've talked to them is that folks on both sides of the aisle are energized for one reason or another, right? Whether it's the left being energized because of, you know, the president's rhetoric, or whatever else they may be, you know, not happy with, or the right being upset with how the Kavanaugh hearings went about. So I think that, yes, both sides are energized. I think voters are going to turn out. But at the end of the day, also, it's important to note that candidates matter, right? And you know, with the example of Congressman Will Hurd that I gave, candidates matter. And that district, which you would think, you know, is a toss-up, and it's still rated a toss-up, majority Hispanic district, you would think that the Hispanic Democratic candidate would win that easily. But that's far from the truth. Because, first of all, his district, even though it's 70% Hispanic, it's proof of the pudding that, you know, the Hispanic community is not monolithic. But Will Hurd, more importantly, is a great elected official. You know, he's a great candidate. And I think that's where you'll start seeing some of these bellwether races maybe decided on a little bit earlier, where these candidates, you know, have been able to sort of get away from all the muck and prove that they've been a good representative or can be a good representative.
Want to ask you about something that originated, I think, in the African-American community. It's the hashtag walk away thing, where people who have for decades, their families and their families before them, their grandfathers, their grandmas, they all voted Democrat. And now all of a sudden they're saying, what has this party done for me? Have they enhanced my life in any way, shape, or form? And they're coming to the conclusion that Democrats haven't helped them. And so they're walking away. And they may not vote Republican. They might vote Libertarian, American Independent Party, whatever. I want to ask you, do you see this happening in the Hispanic community, that folks that traditionally their families have voted Democrat, that they're now essentially walking away?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think overall, I think it's good that people are thinking for themselves, right? Whether they're leaving one party or they're leaving another. I think it's good that you start coming up with your own conclusions, and we're seeing that. And part of that is the access to information that we have nowadays, too. You know, you're able to not only dig deep into someone's track record, but you're also able to expand your own knowledge and evolve your views, if that's the case, on how you feel on certain principles or certain policy decisions. You know, I myself, my parents are both Democrats, and I will say that, and I do not vote Democratic. And you know, whether that's a difficult Thanksgiving conversation, that's something that I take. But my parents, obviously, I'd like to think they have to love me regardless. But you know, that's something that they know, that I've come to my views and my stances on policy through an educated approach, and so they respect that. And you know, while I try to, you know, sway their vote or convince them on certain candidates in Florida, because I can't vote there anymore. You know, that's another.
I have a feeling that's going to be a tough sell.
Yeah,
that's going to be a tough sell. Kev, if people want to know more about Libre Initiative, what you do, the great job you guys do, not just here in the state of Nevada, but around the country, where can they go? Can they help you? Can they become a part of your organization? Explain how.
Absolutely. So we have our Facebook page with the Libre Initiative. We have a great field office here in Vegas. And we can get you connected here. We do a whole host of things. I mean, we engage on multiple policy issues, whether it's, you know, when it was tax reform, we're door knocking, calling folks, having events here, whether it's immigration, whether it's free trade. I mean, we engage on a robust set of issues that all come from the lens of a free market oriented limited government approach. And you can check out our Facebook page or go on our website, thelibreinitiative.com, for more information. And, you know, our folks are always looking for eager volunteers and people that want to make a difference here in the community.
Kev, thanks for coming to town. Thanks for being a part of what I think is going to be a wonderful election on Tuesday. Thanks so much. We'll talk again soon. Next time you're in town, come on by.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Kevin Hernandez, National Policy Director for the Libre Initiative, joining us in studios. Stick around. The president in Columbia, Missouri, last night. What did he tell folks there? We'll let you hear some of it coming up. Live and local now. We'll be right back.
The Moving Wall, the traveling Vietnam Veterans War Memorial, will be in Las Vegas Thursday, November 1st through Sunday, the 4th, 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. each day. The 3,400-foot half-size replica is open to the public and free of charge. Join dignitaries and Vietnam groups 11:45 Friday and 11:45 Saturday, a full turkey luncheon served to all veterans from all wars in service. I'm Jacob Jimerson on behalf of the Jimerson Law Firm, sponsor for this war memorial, inviting you to the memorial site 500 South Las Vegas Boulevard next to the Nevada Supreme Court building.
It keeps getting better and better at Rhythm Kitchen Seafood and Steaks. Hey, Kevin Wall here. The fun begins every afternoon, 4 till 6:30, with the best happy hour in the Vegas Valley. Mondays are extra special at Rhythm Kitchen. Enjoy happy hour all night long. And on Mondays, you get 50% off every bottle of wine under $100. Every day, Rhythm Kitchen features New Orleans-style seafood specialties. Crawfish etouffee, beignets, jambalaya. Like I said, it just keeps getting better and better. Rhythm Kitchen also features a banquet facility. So book your corporate events, birthday, anniversary, holiday parties, or any other celebration. Call Chris at 702-767-8438. That's 702-767-8438. Great food, incredible five-star service. I just love it. Open every day at 4, serving prime steaks and seafood. Rhythm Kitchen, located on South Decatur, just off the 215.
Hello, I'm Kathy Connect, asking you to re-elect my husband, Ron Connect, as Nevada Comptroller. Ron cut spending 13% and returned over $1 million to the state treasury while improving services. He led the fight against the commerce tax. Ron wants to be re-elected to help leave all Nevada's children the same legacy of hope, growth, and opportunity our parents' generation left for us. Thank you for listening, and please re-elect Ron Connect as Nevada Comptroller.
Paid for by the committee to elect Ron Connect.
Hey, Kevin Wall here. I trust Adam Laxalt to protect Nevada's identity and our values as governor. As attorney general, he protected us from sanctuary cities and threats to free speech. His opponent, known as Shady Steve Sisolak, was called corrupt by a judge for trying to give government contracts to political cronies. He claims every tax is on the table and plans on raising our property taxes. As governor, Adam Laxalt will keep Nevada prosperous and free and keep us from turning into California. Early voting begins October 20th, paid for by Laxalt for Nevada.
Hello, my name is Richard MacArthur. I'm running for re-election in Assembly District 4, which is in the northwest part of Las Vegas. I have lived in Las Vegas for 38 years and want Nevada to be a good place to live and work, raise a family, feel safe, and be able to start a business. I support lower taxes, limited government, the right to keep and bear arms, school choice, and voter ID. I'm opposed to sanctuary cities and amnesty for illegals. I humbly ask for your vote in the general election in November. Again, Richard MacArthur, Assembly District 4. Paid for by the committee to elect Richard MacArthur.
Nevada candidate for Governor Steve Sisolak wants to prevent you from protecting your home and family from criminals. Sisolak is following the lead of radical anti-gun Senator Dianne Feinstein, whose newest assault weapons ban includes most of the handguns and semi-automatic rifles Americans use to protect them and their families. In fact, Feinstein said if she could, she would ban all guns. And Steve Sisolak is following her lead. That's why anti-gun groups like Everytown USA, funded by Michael Bloomberg, have poured millions of dollars into races for candidates like Sisolak this year. Sisolak's agenda is simple: to ban semi-automatic firearms, allow government bureaucrats to seize your guns without any court hearing, and maintain a government list of every American who owns a gun. That's why Gun Owners of America is proud to endorse Nevada Attorney General Adam Laxalt for governor. Adam Laxalt will defend the Constitution and your right to protect your home and family from criminals. Paid for by Gun Owners of America.
790 Las Vegas and 98.1 Palm Springs. Talk now. Talk that rocks.
Nevada Federation of Republican Women. They'll join us next, live and local, now.
The Moving Wall, the traveling Vietnam Veterans War Memorial, will be in Las Vegas Thursday, November 1st through Sunday the 4th, 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. each day. The 3,400-foot half-size replica is open to the public and free of charge. Join dignitaries and Vietnam groups 11:45 Friday and 11:45 Saturday, a full turkey luncheon served to all veterans from all wars in service. I'm Jacob Jimerson on behalf of the Jimerson Law Firm, sponsor for this war memorial, inviting you to the memorial site 500 South Las Vegas Boulevard next to the Nevada Supreme Court building.